Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 8 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for spring pre-registration is April 21st. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Jason Snell is making live music in weird and wonderful ways. He is a multidisciplinary artist with a passion for combining engineering and technology with visual arts and music. Recently, he has programmed sensors that can read his brainwaves and translate them into electronic music and visual graphics. He's originally from Iowa and spends his time between Cedar Rapids, Los Angeles, and Berlin. He is here with me today. Hello, Jason.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I want to dive into right into this EEG technology.
Sure.
Tell me exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, no, it is weird and wonderful. I use a Muse headband. It's a commercially available EEG. And that's one of the things that's been fascinating the last few years is that some of these have become more available to artists. And it's marketed as a meditation device, so it pairs with an iPhone app. But it has what's
So the idea is you can monitor what's going on inside your brain to know if you're meditating properly.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Yep. They have an app that they pair with the device. But they have what's called an open API. So it's a programming. If you're a programmer, you can access the device, the data coming off of it, without using their app. You can program your own, which is what I did.
Okay.
And so what I get when I wear it is I get access to the electrical activity in my brain. And it comes through 5 different spectrums. And it's alpha, beta, delta, gamma, and theta. And they relate to different types of brain functioning. And so, you know, right now I'm talking, so my beta is going to be higher. You know, if I were meditating, my alpha would be higher. Sometimes critical thinking is my delta goes higher. And so what I did with those is take that information and then map it to musical decisions, composition decisions.
Okay, so basically you have assigned a sound to a specific kind of brainwave.
It's more the relationship between the brainwaves because they can be pretty complex, so it's not a one-to-one relationship.
Okay.
So, for example, when I listen to music, my alpha goes up. So it's this nonverbal sort of meditative state. And when I perform, if I listen to the music that my brain is producing, my alpha goes up. It's this loop, this feedback loop. And the way I've programmed it to manipulate the sound is when my alpha goes up, it becomes a little dreamier, more bassy, and feels more like subconscious, more like a meditative state. So I've made creative decisions that the quality of the sound relates well to that particular mental state.
All right, and we're going to listen to some of this music in just a moment. But when this is a live musical performance,
yep.
So what are people seeing while they're hearing this music?
Well, they see me sitting on a stage meditating. So I have been pleasantly surprised how engaged audiences have been. In a way, it's a bit understated. I think people are used to dancers and intense lights. And with me sitting there, I think their attention really tunes in to small movements I do, or if I start breathing in a more conscious way to enter a meditative state. Or sometimes I'll do simple movements with my hands to trigger theta waves. And the feedback I've got has been really positive in terms of feeling like they're watching the inside of my brain coming out through the speakers and through the visuals.
And I've seen videos from performances, and you do things with lights to make it a little more visually interesting.
Yep.
What do you do with the environment? How do you create this space?
Sure. So with that same data that I'm composing the music with, I'm also able to channel it into a video app I created. And so the color of the visuals, the width and breadth of the visuals correspond directly to the activity of the specific brainwaves. And so it's a way that the audience can not just hear, but visually see what my brain is doing in that moment.
All right, well, let's find out what this sounds like. Let's play just a snippet of this. So tell me what you were doing to create those sounds.
So about in the middle part of the clip, it got a little bassier, and you could hear a bit of, it's using a filter, a dive down. Mm-hmm. So that was actually my alpha going up. And so you could hear that happening live. There's kind of a heartbeat sound in the bass underneath, and that is corresponding with the overall activity level of my brain. So it's a correspondence to my acceleration rate. So as I get calmer, that heartbeat sound gets slower and slower, and as I'm more activated, it speeds up. And that drum type of sound is one of the more active, accelerated sounds in the sound kit, and that comes up when my delta is high. And so it shows, that's kind of the, this particular song was at the peak of the recent performance here in Iowa City. And that corresponded with my delta. So it's a very vulnerable position because people get to see exactly how nervous or calm or what my brain is doing. You know, they can
see it and hear it.
They can see it and hear it, yeah.
So could you recreate, I'm curious about the kind of control you have over that. Could you recreate something almost exactly the same as that if you tried?
It would be difficult, you know, so that's one of the reasons I gravitate towards this project. I've done techno for about 20 years, and one of my personal pet peeves with techno is it's too static, it's too repetitive. And, you know, I could lay out a DJ or a live set and play the same thing over and over, show after show. With this system, it's intentionally not that. And so each time that I perform it, the composition, the length of the songs, the speed of the music, that's always going to be different.
All right.
Because it's going to be
a
snapshot.
It's not just live, it's living.
Exactly.
All right. Where did this idea come from?
Well, originally it stemmed from a motion sensor project I was working on with a dancer in Berlin. And that project uses a very similar technology, so it set up the technology foundation for this project. And that project was having motion sensors on a dancer, and as she moved, her movement is what triggered the music and composed the music. And so it allowed her to compose to the music that she was then hearing. So it had that same feedback loop. Mm-hmm. And then it was as simple as, well, it was two things. One, I had a dream maybe a year and a half ago, late December, or a little over a year ago. And in the dream, I this idea came up of making music with human DNA sequences. And I woke up, did a Google search, and actually found what those sequences look like. And it looks like notation. So I started playing with the idea of using core parts of the human body and translating that into something musical. And then I was on Instagram one day and saw an ad for that Muse headband. And that combination of the, you know, human-based music with the technology from the motion sensor system, I was able to implement. It uses Bluetooth. So a Bluetooth device communicates to an iPhone app I made. And then I convert that to MIDI, which then plays the synthesizer or drum machine. So it didn't actually take that long to do my first test with the EEG, the scanner.
You mentioned that you've been pleasantly surprised by how engaged people are with watching you make this music because you're not moving a lot. You're not physically doing a lot.
Yeah.
What do you want people to take away from that music experience?
Inspiration. Yeah, absolutely. I've had these different experiences in my life where I was just introduced to a concept. You know, one was when I was in high school. I remember this was 1993, 94. A student teacher showed me HTML for the first time. And just seeing that use, he was a writer. And so you could click on a word and it would lead to a different passage. I mean, it's ultra simple now, mm-hmm. but at the time, to be able to write that way in this nonlinear way, it just planted a seed. And so that's something I'm interested in, is for people to see this and know that it's possible and give them the sense of inspiration or wonder or awe that it is possible to, you know, compose music with your brain. I mean, it's ridiculously sci-fi.
You mentioned earlier the using a dancer's movements, their kinetic movements to create music that they are then dancing to. We have a little bit of sound from a performance like that that was done up at CSPS in Cedar Rapids. So let's listen to a little bit of that. And while we're listening, while we're listening, tell us what's going on.
Sure. So I was working with a dancer, Christopher McMillan, and I was part of a project with CSPS and the Stanley Museum. He's moving, and it's triggering specific words. And so in my work in Berlin, the dancer was triggering sounds, more musical sounds. And with him, we wanted to create sentences. And so as he's moving, he's able to construct these different sentences with his movement.
Wow. All right. Fascinating. And so, again, I asked you earlier if you can recreate something that you've already made. Can he put those words together to tell a story? Is there that much control?
It's so fine-tuned that I think it would be different each time.
You know,
so it was more like those old beat poet experiments of typing up a page, cutting it up into pieces and throwing it up and seeing where it landed on the ground. And that became the new sentences, like William Burroughs. Mm-hmm. So it was more along those lines where it was these intentional randomizing experiments.
Where do you see this work going?
Well, a lot of opportunities have come up here in Iowa. One is I just got an art grant from the city of Iowa City. And so I'll be doing some presentations of the technology down at the University of Iowa on April 24th. And it's the Nexus department. It's in the College of Engineering. And then also with the art grant, they want me to present for younger kids as well. And so I'll work to develop the program where it'll be understandable to little kids. I'm not sure if little kids know what Bluetooth is, but I'll figure out a way to communicate.
Oh, they do.
It.
All little kids know what Bluetooth is now. Is this the kind of thing where you could let someone else have this experience as well?
Yes.
Put the headband on them and give them an opportunity?
Particularly with the motion sensors in little kids. I just did a workshop at Coder Dojo at NuboCo up in Cedar Rapids. Mm-hmm. It was just this weekend, and the little kids put on the motion sensors and just ran and ran and ran and were able to make sounds with their movement. With the EEG, I think it'd be easier with adults because you have to be fairly still, but I'm willing to try it.
A long time ago, when you were in college in Iowa, mm-hmm. you had a professor tell you that you needed to leave the state of Iowa to have your work recognized and really to make a difference. And you did leave.
I did.
And now you're back, not full-time, but mm-hmm. you're back. I'm curious about how that feels. I mean, do you think that was good advice back when you got it, that you needed to go?
Unfortunately, I think it was good advice. And that's something I want to change. You know, so I'm doing a lot of organizing work here, particularly with artists. CSPS has been a great ally, also with the Stanley Museum, in terms of creating opportunities here where artists can cultivate and not have to, you know, go to New York or LA or Berlin. Something I created just this month was a new synthesizer meetup where electronic artists can learn from each other. So it's that type of education environment that I've learned through my travels, just sitting in studios with really excellent artists. And even if I just pick up one thing from that day and that changes my music or my production style, it's so valuable. And there's no reason that myself and other talented artists can't teach other artists here. So that's a primary focus of mine here.
What brought you back to Iowa? What made you want to be here again?
What I've been doing the last few years is following the opportunity, the next door that opens, and just a ton of opportunities came this winter. And the first one was that CSPS show with the Stanley. And working with Christopher McMillan, he's a fantastic dancer. And then when I did that, that led to the first EEG show, which is over in Des Moines at Yellow Door Gallery. And by doing these different shows, I was able to see the community that has built up here. And I think what's happening is as the cities get more expensive, you know, like I think a studio in San Francisco is like $4,000 a month now. And so I think a lot of very talented people are leaving the cities and able to work with each other and create creative environments, you know, in places like Cedar Rapids or Iowa City or Des Moines.
So maybe a student in college today, you might not have to give them that advice. Maybe you can be an artist and make a living and get noticed here?
Exactly. I think that's the change that's happening right now.
You are still dividing your time between Los Angeles and Iowa and Berlin. Mm-hmm. What does that add to your creative process? That must be important to you.
It is. So it does two things. One is it continually exposes me to new ideas. And so as I meet with friends and other artists in LA or Berlin, I learn more. And I learn different styles that are developing on different tracks in those cities. And then the other thing is when I come back to a place, there's something about being a hometown artist that sometimes can be difficult because someone will say, well, you'll be here next month, so we'll book you next month. And so that type of travel does have a social capital. And so if when I go over to Berlin as an American, there's more interest in me than if I were in Berlin full time.
In your absence, a lot of things about Iowa changed, but did also your view of Iowa change in that time away? Did it change how you thought about this state?
It has, and it, particularly this last couple of years, you know, I've seen particularly Nubo in Cedar Rapids become really one of the coolest neighborhoods in the country, if not the world. To be in an environment that has, you know, so much arts and technology, startups and companies and art halls, that's something that pocket of creativity is something I would see in, you know, downtown Los Angeles or on the east side of Berlin. And there's no reason that there can't be this wonderful cross-pollination between communities that have that similar level of creativity.
Well, Jason Snell, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Jason Snell is a multidisciplinary artist with a passion for combining engineering and technology with visual arts and music. Lately, he's been programming sensors that can read his brainwaves and translate them into electronic music and visual graphics. He'll be performing on April 24th at the Nexus Open House at the University of Iowa College of Engineering, and I'm sure there will be many other performances to come. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harrop, Emily Woodbury, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You never have to miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This is Talk of Iowa.